Another summer had come, and still I had not speared the giant devilfish that lived near the cave. Every day during the spring, Rontu and I went to look for him. I would put the canoe in the water and paddle slowly through the cave, from one opening to the other, often several times. I saw many devilfish there where the black water is streaked with light, but not the giant one. At last, I gave up looking for him and began to gather abalones for winter. The red shells hold the sweetest meat and are best for drying, though the green ones and the black are also good. Because the red ones are the sweetest, starfish prey upon them. This star-shaped creature places itself over the shell of an abalone. With its five arms spread out against the rock to which the abalone is fastened, it holds the shell with its suckers and then begins to lift itself. The starfish pulls against the abalone shell, sometimes for days, holding on with its suckers and pushing up with its legs, until little by little the heavy shell comes loose from the body. One morning we left the cave and paddled out to the reef, which is joined to it. For many days I had been gathering a few shellfish on the rocks at Coral Cove, but I had been watching the reef and waiting for the right time to harvest. This is when there are few starfish feeding, for they are as hard to pry loose from the abalone as an abalone is to pry from a rock. The tide was low, and the reef rose far out of the water. Along its sides were great numbers of red abalones and very few starfish, so before the sun was high, I filled the bottom of the canoe. The day was windless, and since I had all I could carry, I tied the canoe, and with Rontu following me, climbed onto the reef to look for fish to spear for our supper. Blue dolphins were leaping beyond the kelp beds. In the kelp, otter were playing at the games they never tire of. And around me, everywhere, the gulls were fishing for scallops, which were numerous that summer. They grow on the floating kelp leaves, and there were so many of them that much of the kelp near the reef had been dragged to the bottom. Still, there were scallops that the gulls could reach, and taking them in their beaks, they would fly far above the reef and let them drop. The gulls would then swoop down to the rocks and pick the meat from the broken shells. Scallops fell on the reef like rain, which amused me, but not Rontu, who could not understand what the gulls were doing. Dodging this way and that, I went to the end of the reef where the biggest fish live. With a sinew line and a hook made of abalone shell, I caught two that had large heads and long teeth, but are good to eat. I gave one to Rontu, and on the way back to the canoe gathered purple sea urchins to use for dyeing. Rontu, who was trotting along in front of me, suddenly dropped his fish and stood looking down over the edge of the reef. There, swimming in the clear water, was a devilfish. It was the same one I had been hunting for. It was a giant. Seldom did you see any devilfish here, for they like deep places, and the water along this part of the reef is shallow. Perhaps this one lived in the cave and came here only when he could not find food. Rontu made no sound. I fixed the head of the spear and the long string that held it to my wrist. I then crawled back to the edge of the reef. The giant had not moved. He was floating just below the surface of the water, and I could plainly see his eyes. They were the size of small stones and stood out from his head, with black rims and gold centers, and in the centers a black spot, like the eyes of a spirit I had once seen on a night that rain fell and lightning forked in the sky. Where my hands rested was a deep crevice, and in it a fish was hiding. The giant was half the length of my spear from the reef, but while I watched, one of his long arms ran out like a snake and felt its way into the crevice. It went past the fish and along the side of the rock, and then the end of it curled back. As the arm gently wound itself around the fish from behind, I rose to one knee and drove the spear. I aimed at the giant's head. But though it was larger than my two fishes and a good target, I missed. The spear struck down through the water and slanted off. Instantly, a black cloud surrounded the devilfish. The only thing I could see of him was one long arm still grasping his prey. I jumped to my feet to pull in the spear, thinking that I might have a chance to throw it again. As I did so, the shaft bobbed back to the surface, and I saw that the barbed point had come loose. At the same moment, the string tightened. My grip on it broke, and aware that I had struck the devilfish, I quickly dropped the coils I held, for when the string runs out fast, it burns your hands or becomes entangled. The devilfish does not swim with fins or flippers like other things in the sea. He takes water in through the hole in the front of his body and pushes the water out behind through two slits. When he is swimming slowly, you can see these two streams trailing out, but only then. When he moves fast, you can see nothing except a streak in the water. The quails I had dropped on the rock hopped and sang as they ran. Then there were no more of them. The string tightened on my wrist, and to lessen the shock, I leaped across the crevice in the direction the giant had taken. With the string in both hands, but still fastened to my wrist, I braced my feet on the slippery rock and leaned backwards. The string snapped tight with the weight of the devilfish. It began to stretch, and fearing that it might break, I walked forward, yet I made him pull me every step. He was moving toward the cave, along the edge of the reef. The cave was a good distance away. If he got there, I would surely lose him. The canoe was tied just in front of me. Once I was in it, I could let him pull me until he grew tired, but there was no way to untie the canoe and still hold on to the string. Rontu, all this time, was running up and down the reef, barking and leaping at me, which made my task harder.